time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Again, it's not protecting the existence of a bowl. It's protecting how much money certain bowls make.
Pete Thamel.
Like, that's just going to be a bad day for everybody. And that's what these guys are setting themselves up for.
With SI's Pat Forte.
He said, "What are you buying me for Christmas?" I said, "Well, I guess nothing in garnet and gold," because he had just basically pulled out of the Florida State athletic director search.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. They had one of those meetings or something. I don't know, whatever. Some highly sponsored gathering of college football leaders. All the conference commissioners, various supposedly important people. I think it was in Vegas this time. Is that right?
It was. Yeah, they relocated from New York to Vegas. And it's the same schmall or schmooze, except the coaching carousel no longer revolves around this event. You know, it used to when it was this National Football Foundation thing in New York. But now the coaching carousel moves much faster. And so all this stuff is done. Or a lot of it's done by the time you get to this. So, different, same event, different vibe, different venue.
All right. Glad they went to Vegas. New York was a little too, that's too much business. Too cold. Yeah. Got to, you know, get to Vegas. Get yourself on a lazy river down by the pool or something. They've given up on the, remember when like Vegas, you said the word Vegas and they'd all have a conniption, like gambling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing how Vegas has become the thing. The Pac-12 is practically ready to move there.
Right, so, at the start of my career, there was a controversy, and Pat, you probably remember this. They wouldn't give Final Four credentials to newspapers that printed betting lines of college games.
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell, Pat?
I remember they at least tried that. I don't know whether they
tried it. Yeah. Again, but this was like,
if you took gambling mid-90s. Ads, that was what it was. I don't know. I think they considered the gambling line, but they, I definitely was like, if you took one of those, you know, call 1-900 this for, you pay it $2 a minute, the guy will give you his winner of the day, which never made any sense at all. Anything like that. Now it's just, yeah.
Yeah, that is funny. I mean, the amount of angst that gambling used to cause for the NCAA and for everyone tangentially related to it.
Yeah.
And again, like even when I was at ESPN 15 years ago, I could not put the lines in my stories. They edited them out. Like, we've come a long way.
Come a long way. And it's not just the NCAA, it's the NFL, it's everybody else. Now it's just like, I don't know, somebody's sponsoring everything. But anyway, they had all the guys there. So we got some interesting quotes. I guess they bring them up on stage and ask them questions, and it's always some doozies. The playoff expansion, we seem to be still at this impasse. ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips seems to prefer 8. The SEC says it's 4 or 12. The Big Ten and the Big 12 want, or the Big Ten wants 12, but 5 automatic bids plus 1. Although they also Kevin Warren also gave the dreaded, "We must protect the bowls." That's always a nightmare. I'm 100% for expansion. What's the right number? We've bantered about 8. Now maybe he's going 8. Want to make sure it grows slowly. Also, 12 is attractive. 3 things for me. Number 1, we must protect the bowls. Big believer in auto bids and open it up to multiple media partners. Bowl games exist on welfare. Bowl games cannot go out of business unless the conferences say they're going out of business. Because what a conference does, like the Big Ten, I'm just going to explain it to the Big Ten, how the Big Ten does things. They pool their postseason money, and then they distribute that money out. It doesn't matter whether you win the national championship playing 2 playoff games that make enormous amounts of money, or you're in the worst bowl game, you get the same amount of money. They'll cover your cost. Hence, bowl games where teams lose money, which is most of them, because of ridiculous ticket guarantees and all of that, but that's how the bowl stays afloat. You lose money going to the bowl game, but you will make it back because of the other games. So a bowl game is protected by you. There's just, they act like this is a, like this is just a market force. What do you mean protect the bowls? The day your ADs are actually losing money sending their team to a bowl and they stop getting a bowl bonus, then maybe a bowl game might go out of business because a bunch of teams would say, no, we don't want to go to the bowl. But until that happens, and considering they need to add a bowl this year because enough teams made it to 6-6, they had to put a 6-7 Hawaii team in, right? The bowls are going out of business. Why is this hard for people to understand?
No, I mean, it's hard for people to understand because they've been fed this line for how long now by people?
I get the fans because they're getting live. But how is a conference commissioner not understand? It's like me saying, if I don't give my kid an allowance, they're going to get evicted. It's like, no, the only person that can evict it is me. And I would then get arrested for throwing my child out in the street. So I don't even understand this. How does this work still?
I love it. Dan, you tried it hard as hell to kill the bowl system. You did a great job helping us get to a playoff and away from a BCS, but you can't kill the whole bowl structure.
I explained the bowl system.
Yeah.
I had a conference commissioner, okay, a very, very smart conference commissioner, as I was going through this with them, because we were trying to make sure, like, this is so nuts. The system is so ridiculous that you're like, this can't be real, right? Like, you guys talk about how the bowls are going to go under, but as I see it, you're paying the bowl to exist so that your AD gets a bonus, your coach gets a bonus, then the kids get to go to a bowl game, whatever, it's your money. So I took all the stuff and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I don't get it. What am I missing? And it's, wait, how much money? What's going on with this? What's this line on this contract? How's it? Because I got all the no one ever looks. Kevin Warren. I don't know. The Bulls can't go out of business, and they're almost all owned by ESPN, just a little fledgling outfit, unless you say we're not going to the bowl. So as long as you don't say it, the Bulls are protected, unless there's something else there. I don't know how someone can say this, but they keep saying it. Pete, do you have any idea? Can you help me?
I can't help you. I can't help you. And Ohio State finished sixth in these rankings. Is that right? Notre Dame 5, Ohio yes. State 6. Let's just say these final rankings came down in 2026, the first year of the next iteration, whatever that may be. And let's just say we were still a smaller playoff. Let's just say the constipation that is being caused right now by the Alliance a little bit, but Kevin Warren and Jim Phillips appear to be the more vocal critics of what they want. If you don't go to 12 and Ohio State is on the outside looking in, but should have / would have been in, it is just going to be bonkers for whoever got in the way from those fan bases. And if they like logic around to the fact that, wait a minute, we could have been in the playoff if it had happened, but we got in the way of that. Like, that's just going to be a bad day for everybody. And that's what these guys are setting themselves up for. Now, look, they don't have much to negotiate with. The ACC has that bad TV deal. They have very few cards left in their hand. They're trying to play some cards right here. Kevin Warren's trying to play the Big Ten Rose Bowl card. God bless them. Into perpetuity, they're still holding on tight. But I just feel like the other commissioners are sitting back being like, really? Those who have the most to gain are objecting the loudest. It doesn't make sense. And eventually, I do think that position crumbles.
So, like, and again, if you expand the playoff, you get more money into the Big Ten. So let's take the Big Ten would have 3 playoff teams out of 12 this year, and they would have Ohio State hosting a game. And if they did it right, Michigan then would host the next game. So you would have an enormous amount of money pouring in. That extra money into your quote-unquote postseason pool, if you will, would then actually allow you far more money to prop up the lower bowls. It would assure that the bowls would continue. Now you say, wait, we're taking 2 teams from the Big Ten out. They're in a playoff. Fine. Then you send 5-7 Indiana and 5-7 Rutgers, or Illinois, 5-7 Illinois and 5-7 Rutgers. I think they both like to go to a bowl. Then you send them to a bowl and cover their costs because they're going to lose like $750,000 or something at the game. It's pennies. Yeah. The way to protect the bowls is the playoff.
No, Illinois fans who haven't been anywhere in years, they can say, hey, we're going to play a bowl game in Tucson. You want to go? Like, yeah.
I mean, yeah, they'll whatever. Go. I mean, you could say, oh, they don't deserve it. Who deserves it at 6-6? Whatever. It's just shuffling the money. They act like this is like, if you really were running one of these bowls independently and were trying to make a dollar, without the and you had to pay a school enough money that it was worth their while to come and play you, you wouldn't be able to do it. You'd be out of business. So you rely on the lousy team to take money from the top team. Now, if the Big Ten said, "Hey, Michigan's going to get all its money this year, and everyone else is screwed," then yeah, that would do it. But they don't, and they never have. Neither has the other conferences. So it just doesn't make any sense. I would feel a lot better about these guys if their reasonings were, I don't know, made any sense at all.
Well,
I can't take their objections to this playoff with any bit of like reality when that's what they're coming up with.
I had a talk with somebody about the bowl objections this week, and it's like, where's the ACC coming from on this? Said, is it really, they got a lot of high-powered academic institutions. Do the presidents, not want to play these games in December and mess with the final schedule? I got laughed at for suggesting that. And we went through a couple other scenarios. Man, maybe. And then it said one other possibility, spite with the SEC and some being angry at Greg Sankey for blowing up things with realignment and for the ACC not getting Texas and Oklahoma, which they did try to do. So whether it's that simple, I don't know, but that was at least proffered as one suggestion to me.
Mike, spite.
Oh, don't underestimate the petty. The petty is real here.
I think it's spite, but again, like, get over it. Every one of you would have done the same thing the SEC did. Every league would have added Oklahoma and Texas.
The ACC actively tried to add them.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Get over that. Jim Phillips, he's just not committing. He's trying to do this thing. Other one, he got asked this question, so I don't want to hammer these guys on all of it because it's some of it's like the context. But what about Notre Dame joining the ACC? And there was like, I saw some call, this proves Notre Dame must join the ACC. Notre Dame ain't joining the ACC. Come on. Makes no sense. And he said, Notre Dame got a chance to see what the ACC was all about last year. I'll leave it at that. I think it was mutually beneficial relationship. It wasn't COVID.
Yeah.
I will say this. The only way Notre Dame joins a conference is if they no longer have access to the playoff. Like, you literally set a playoff up that says you must be in a conference. Then maybe they do it. They will join a conference. But until that day, and there's no move on it, it would be moronic to join a conference if you're Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Flat out moronic. They get to play a national schedule that allows them to recruit nationally, which is imperative because they have a very shallow pool of potential recruits. They get their own TV deal. It sets them apart. Joining the Big Ten or the ACC makes them another program. It would be a terrible idea. Another one that just seems to kind of float out, another idea that just seems to come up every once in a while. Oh, this proves it. They got to join a conference. Better join a conference. Why in the world would they do that?
Yeah, there's no
right. Is that, can anyone come up with a good reason for Notre Dame to join a conference?
No. And having been up there on Monday and listened to Jack Swarbrick, there is no inclination, or remains no inclination, to join a conference.
And it would not behoove college football to have a playoff and not include Notre Dame, which has finished in the top five, three of the last 4 years. You think the TV executives are sitting back being like, no, we don't want Notre Dame in there. We don't want the biggest national brand, the divisive longtime power that pulls diverse geography, a strong religious pull, and a lot of people hate them. Don't forget about that. A lot of people hate them, think Bama's going to beat them by 40. So, yeah, I don't see from the places that matter anyone saying, well, we're going to set up a playoff and we don't want Notre Dame to be part of that. That just doesn't make any sense, because that's a huge risk. If Notre Dame is very good, like they have been in recent seasons, very good, and they're not included, ESPN and Fox want Notre Dame to be on the potential menu. And even if, these deals are also wound through these BCS bowls or New Year Six bowls or whatever they're called now, they want Notre Dame in those too. Notre Dame, sure. Oklahoma State is going to do a big old number in that fiesta. Like, there's no doubt about that. And so, in theory, it would probably behoove ESPN for Notre Dame to stay independent. Because if they went to the ACC, they'd have to blow up the ACC deal and pay them more money, which they have the steal of the century. I don't think they're particularly inclined to do.
Absolutely. And ESPN already gets the Notre Dame anytime they play in an ACC stadium.
Yeah, right.
Which is usually 2 to 3 times. This year they played at Virginia Tech. They played at Virginia. And where was that Carolina game? That was at home. All right. Well, next year, maybe they'll play three times. So you want, and you know, the ACC, you go, well, this is, you don't have them full time. Yeah. But they show up and it's the biggest ticket. And it's always the highest ticket price when Notre Dame comes. I mean, it just is.
And it's going to be a prime time window when Notre Dame goes and plays at an ACC team. They're putting that game where a lot of people are going to watch it.
Yeah. But for Notre Dame's competitive interest, it makes no sense to join a conference. Right now, they play at least one game a year in California. They play them on the East Coast. They have their Shamrock series. They can pop them around. Next year, I think they're going to Vegas. They can do a lot of different things. They can schedule games at the last minute with that Shamrock series, which a lot of people, we'll get to another interesting quote on that, right? They have traditional rivals all over the place. They can play in Chicago. That, you know, there was one year they played in Chicago, New York, LA, and San Diego, like 4 weeks in a row. They can get to big markets. They can get down to Texas, wherever they want to be. They go, and they have to be. It's the only way they're good. If they are not in this, Notre Dame football will never be. If they're not independent, Notre Dame football will never even be in the mix again. A better quote. Let's not be all negative. Although let's. George Kliakoff, Pac-12 commissioner, calls scheduling college football games 12 years in advance, quote unquote, insane, end quote. Indeed.
Yeah. See, this is what's great when you get some fresh eyes from the outside who walk in and go, why do we do it this way? Huh?
I personally like to know what I'm doing in 3034 on October 9th.
San Jose State's coming in, Dan.
Okay. This is like when we sit there with the bowls. Remember when the bowls used to extend invitations in like October to teams?
Oh, yeah.
This is a thing. They used to give out a bowl because the bowl was like, this was before they became welfare bowls.
Right.
They were actual businesses. And they were not-for-profits that they were skimming the hell out of. But they were, you know, there was at least a bottom line. They weren't guaranteed to make it like they are now. And so you'd sit there and say, hey, Penn State's 5-0, they got a lot of fans. Let's just invite them.
Yeah.
And a team would have to decide in the middle of October whether to take it. And sometimes it blew up on them and sometimes it worked. And that's one of the reasons sometimes you'd have this undefeated, you know, our 11-1 team playing a 7-5 team and it would, or whatever, it wasn't 12 games then. All this stuff. And you look back now and you go, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life, right? That is right. That's what this is going to be.
Yeah.
He hopes Alliance members. Leaving the SEC out. SEC is going to have some interesting. If this alliance actually holds, SEC is going to struggle to schedule big non-conference games. I think they'll be all right. The alliance can create an interconference challenge format where the dates get saved and non-conference games can get scheduled the previous January. That would make a lot of sense to me. He wants to go to 8 games wants the Big Ten to go to 8 conference games to join the ACC. That would be pretty awesome, huh? We just like had a January day where we announced the challenge.
It'd be fantastic.
We need some off-season stuff, right? Yeah. Like the NFL does this.
Sure.
They stay in the news all year round.
Yeah, between the end of the playoff and the National Signing Day, which hopefully goes back to February, but we'll get to that, I think, here in a few minutes. But, yeah, have the Alliance scheduling announcement and set up the games. Now, the one thing, everybody will be like, oh, yeah, Ohio State's going to play USC and Clemson's going to play at Michigan. You can't have that every year. You can't have all the best playing the other best or else it's not going to work out. You're going to have to vary it up somewhat. But hopefully you have marquee matchups every year. And if you can set them in January, all the better.
I'm looking at Ross Dellinger's story from Vegas that encapsulates some of these quotes. And Bob Bowlsby, who's kind of in that, like, Jim Boeheim, I don't care anymore, so I'm going to say what's on my mind phase, which is a great phase, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's not criticism.
Good phase of life.
Yes. We like honesty. You've earned the right for unfiltered thoughts. Bowlsby, who is quite frankly scorned that he was not part of the alliance, said, quote, to Ross, quote, I think they've got some work to do to demonstrate the alliance is a force to be reckoned with. Burr.
I'm not in the alliance. Quote, the alliance sucks.
Quote, we've got some new guys who don't have a whole lot of sense of history. I don't begrudge them that. It's a lot to get up to speed on. That's a very polite way to say they don't know what they're talking about. Maybe they'll learn. The petty was very real in Vegas. They doubled down on it, one could say.
Well, how about being Bowlsby, right? You spend 2 years working on this playoff. You go through every single thing. You come up with this plan that everybody likes. Everyone's like, hey, this is good. 12 teams, 6-6, six automatic bids, blah, blah, blah. All right, everyone's loving it. Home games, they even kind of break that. We got to protect the bowls. Again, it's not protecting the existence of a bowl. It's protecting how much money certain bowls make. That's all that is. So you got all that work, and then you get rated. The guy you worked with, the SEC, rates your league. And then the other leagues who didn't put in any effort on this playoff start poo-pooing the playoff. I'd be kind of chapped at those guys, too. It's like, I was the one I had to sit next to Craig Sankey the whole time while he was plotting to steal my team.
Right.
Seems like there's a little chippiness, always some good chippiness. All right, little side story. So this poor guy, Tracy Davidson, he owns three restaurants in Tulsa, and he got linked up once with the Oklahoma, with Lincoln Riley, and catered. Well, at some point he had won some barbecue events, right? One time he got to cook for the team. And Lincoln Riley basically said he made these tomahawk steaks, smoked them on his smoker. And he said, man, this is awesome. He says, if this was, if we gave these to recruits, we'd sign all the recruits. So a friendship broke out, and he started, anytime Lincoln Riley would have like recruiting events at his house or anything or any big event, this guy would come and smoke up some tomahawk steaks, which, I mean, just sound delicious. I'm really talking about this story just for the food, just to get excited about this.
the expense of cooking up tomahawk steaks for an entire football team or, you know, for like a recruiting class?
Yeah, not cheap. So
not
he
small.
Had three smokers going and eventually hauling them back and forth from Tulsa to Riley's house is a pain in the neck. So he just left them. He left like two of them at Lincoln Riley's house in the backyard. Well, thought that was good, but then all of a sudden, Lincoln Riley bails for California. And this poor guy doesn't know who to call. No one's returning his call.
Did the smokers go with Lincoln?
That was the question. Was the link who took the smokers? Where's my smokers? Right. This guy's like every other Sooner fan. He's a little chapped at Lincoln. So this becomes a thing in Oklahoma. Hashtag Smokergate. Can we get his smokers back? He's calling the realtor. He doesn't know who the heck to find. He's calling assistants, but some of them are actually working for USC. You know, that's been a big thing. So finally he gets a hold of the realtor. This is a big thing. There's a lot of to do in Oklahoma about this. Everyone, you know, guy deserves his smoker back.
Yeah.
And he wasn't allowed to come to the house. They had to like put someone else had to work as an intermediary. It's this big long controversy, but he did get his meat smokers back from Lincoln Riley. So let it be known, Lincoln Riley took all their recruits, but he did leave the smokers.
Took the recruits, took half the staff, left the smokers. All right. It's like, what is it? The Godfather line. Leave the gun, take the cannolis.
That's it. Yeah. So I don't know if Brent Venables is going to hire this guy. Like, bring him in. Lincoln was recruiting well, and maybe it was the tomahawk
stakes.
It wasn't just the offense or something.
It's probably the Heisman Trophy winners. I would think it was the Heisman Trophy winners.
May not have won the Heisman without the steak. You never
Listen,
know.
You got to see this story. They got pictures of these steaks.
Baker Mayfield would have been nothing without the tomahawk steak. Kyler Murray, nothing. Kyler Murray would have gone off and played baseball if it weren't for the steak.
So reminds of the infamous snow cone machine. Between the Memphis and Kentucky snow cone machine debate.
Oh, yeah.
That right. was good. Yes. That was good.
I think we've discussed it before, but when John Calipari left Memphis, this is the story. He had a snow cone machine that he had bought the snow cone machine and used it during the like youth basketball summer camps at Memphis. And the kids would buy snow cones, right? You can make a pretty good profit on snow cone. Little ice, little whatever. But then he went to Kentucky, but he forgot to pack. You know, they all leave so quick. So he left behind the snow cone machine, and he started calling Memphis saying, Josh Pastner took over. I want my snow cone machines back.
Well, the funny thing there, too, is there was folklore, which Josh Pastner has neither confirmed nor denied, that Cal took a lot of stuff with him from Memphis, like gear, you know, sneakers, whatever. Like, I don't know why he wanted all the Memphis gear when he's leaving, but supposedly he left with a lot of stuff.
So I believe they organized a drop off of the snow cone machine, is the way it was told to me. Who owns the snow cone machine? Who owns these smokers? If you leave a smoker at a guy's house, I mean,
yeah, it doesn't mean he owns it. It means you're loaning it.
Possession is like, what is it, like 9/10 of the law? I'm glad Lincoln did the right thing.
Smoker's got to be expensive.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, what is it? Lincoln's not going to know how to smoke it either. You need the guy. I mean, otherwise,
is right. Lincoln like famously bad on the grill? Like he does like grill shots on Twitter, and they're like notoriously terrible.
Yeah, a fan up? Said I can't defend the brisket anymore.
Yeah,
that's the famous line.
Oh, that's so, right. That was, yeah, he overdid the brisket, right? Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So yeah. No, I'm you sure need the
tilapia
guy.
Will be great out in L.A. or
grilled asparagus.
Yeah, there you go. Yes.
Yeah. It's just going to get on the acai bowl train.
All right. So we're going to do our big bowl preview next week. Part one, we'll go through every bowl game, break it down, all the stuff. But we did want to talk about our few favorites we got coming up. I think stand out. Obviously not the playoff games or Rose Bowl looks pretty interesting. Ohio State, Utah. But a couple of the early ones to get you excited. Let's start with the Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl. Tropical Smoothie Cafe getting involved, huh? Take that, Smoothie King.
Smoothie battles coming.
I want
UTSC and San Diego State. That's even a good game.
A lot of letters. You can't spell UTSA versus San Diego State without all the letters. That is a very good game, though. So the Frisco is not San Francisco. It's the Frisco, Texas.
Right.
You like Tropical Smoothie or Smoothie King? That's the question.
Is Smoothie King involved in any bowls?
I know. I don't think they are. So now we got to swing our alliance.
Yeah, they've been knocked out.
I heard Bad Boy Mowers is out, too. I'm just disappointed in that.
That hurts you.
That's a whole ball game, too, between Florida and UCF.
Yeah. Oh, is that one? Okay, yes, here it is.
Yeah.
Union Home Mortgage.
Yeah, that's boring.
Gasparilla Bowl.
We don't like... It does. Union Home Mortgage Tax Act. I mean, come on. We need the Bad Boy Mowers back.
No one wants to think
guaranteed
about their
rate. It's a lot of like if you were an accountant, these bowls would be your MO.
Lending Tree Bowl. Yeah, appealing to people.
Whatever happened to Gallery Furniture, right? Like that's a bowl name.
You know? Mattress Mac, baby.
Bad Boy Mower. At least they get the mowers. They're cool. There's things to look at. Like, I don't care about my Union Home Mortgage, Gasparilla Bowl. UCF versus Florida, though. I mean, there's some good spite there. There's some pressure on Gus Bus to win that, right?
Definitely. Yes, because you finally get your shot at them, and you should be better than they are. This is a good year for Florida to take that game because if they tank it and lose, they can just say, look, it's part of this terrible year. Trust me, we'll be better next year.
We ain't got a coach. Yeah, all that.
Yeah, right.
Florida's lost 8 recruits in the last week. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, yeah.
They had a starting receiver go in the portal on Thursday as well. Jacob Copeland, good player.
Got a little work there for Billy Napier. They may flip a nice safety, though, that Notre Dame had. So, you know, they'll get some new guys, too.
What is the PUBG mobile game?
We'll do that test. Can you name the sponsor next week?
Okay.
All right. So let's not kill next week's gig.
Okay. Sorry.
The AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Texas Tech versus Mississippi State. I believe does Coach Leach still have lawsuits pending against Texas Tech?
Yeah, instead of a California closet sponsoring, it should be sponsored by Lubbock Closets because that would be that game will dig up all the old Mike Leach, Craig James, who's disappeared off the face of the earth, by the way.
Storage shed.
You did a story trying to find Craig James, didn't you, Pete?
I did. He became a pastor in the Dallas area, and he's like pretty much gone. I think our younger listeners, both of them, would probably have a hard time grasping how big Craig James was. Like, he was bigger than Kirk Herbstreit at a time with no social media, at a time with no internet. Basically, like, college football was a, 15 Saturday a year thing, and he was the face of the sport. And he, you know, he was his own big rollicking brand. He had a broadcaster school at one point. And
worked for Yahoo Sports too. He was he had a column on Yahoo Sports back in the day.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I mean, the three of us have all had that at one point too. So that's not exactly some grand accomplishment. But yeah, no, that was it was interesting. But that sort of debacle with Leach and his son, and then the shadow campaign to undercut Leach, cut him, and then he was still a viable broadcaster, and he ran for Senate, I believe, and was, think of the rightest politician you know, and he was right of them. That got him tossed off the air for some extremist stuff, and
pretty wild yeah, career move. He really was huge. He was bigger than Herb Street at the time. Plus, I mean, legendary player. Yeah. He still refuses to admit he got money from SMU. I was like, well, you're the only one who didn't.
Right. Yeah, well, we don't even need him to admit it ever more because everybody else has admitted it. And the NCAA found it. You know, I mean.
It's like, just go with it at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was a very difficult guy to work alongside. I remember that.
Yes.
He was a challenge for everybody at our company. So, I hope he's doing well.
Everybody at every company, I think.
Yeah. Hope he's doing well. We got the Cheez-It Bowl, Clemson versus Iowa State, kind of the top five preseason.
Yeah.
You could have gotten some decent, if I'd said, hey, semifinal Iowa State Clemson back in like August, be like, okay.
Yeah. But more likely than the Cheez-It Bowl in August.
Everybody likes a bowl of Cheez-Its. More notable than anything, it is the unveiling of the Cheez-It Bowl has a mascot named Prince Chedward. Why'd they name it Chedward? Am I missing something on that?
Like Prince Edward, Prince Chedward.
Oh, Prince Edward. Is he the most famous prince right now?
I don't know, but or you Prince gotta Charming? Rhyme. You gotta bring some, you know, cheese play in there. So cheddar, ched, you know.
Prince Chedward has I'm taking a look. First off, he's made of cheese, apparently.
Imagine that.
He has a big, like one of those British coats. He's got, looks like almost a turnover chain that says Cheez-It Bowl. And he has a staff. And the staff at the top, and you know, like if you have a staff, you need like kind of a thing at the end.
An ornament at the top.
Yeah. It's like an eight-sided star where two pieces of like cheddar cheese, like one and then turn.
Those are Cheez-Its.
Oh, those are the Cheez-Its. Okay. Is that what a Cheez-It? That's not what a Cheez-It looks like, is it? All right, two Cheez-Its on it.
Okay.
Prince Chedward. So,
I mean, you're
trying too
hard.
We have to protect the bowls. We have to protect the bowls, people.
So that we can have Prince Chedward, yes. They're trying too hard when they already got the talking wheel of cheese. It's the perfect mascot, you know, on all the commercials. I like the talking wheel of cheese. Now you're going to get rid of him and have Prince Chedward? Okay.
Clemson was involved in the game between West Virginia, where West Virginia took back like a punt or something and trucked Obi, the orange mascot. So I'm going to wonder if Clemson ends up.
Was that the 70-7 game?
Yeah.
It was 70-35 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a really high scoring game. So
yeah, that was when Dabo was first on the scene and they were gently nudged, giving up 70. In that bowl game. And that was another reason why I thought Dabo would never make it as a coach. I was, again, wrong.
Didn't they get Kevin Steele fired? Is that right, Pat?
Yes. Yes.
Watch out, Chedward. They're coming. The Tigers. They'll truck
probably
you.
The best thing that ever happened to Clemson because it got him Brent Venables. And that's when, and then things started to turn. Chad Morris came. Chad Morris went and got sophomore quarterback Deshaun Watson out of the greater Atlanta area, who Georgia hadn't offered yet because they didn't want to irk like the top junior quarterback who ended up becoming a punter. So it's funny how dynasties are built. A lot of it's unintentional.
All because Obi got run over by West Virginia.
There we go.
So one thing about Brett Venables going to Oklahoma is obviously a big deal for Oklahoma. They've got their guy. What's it do to Clemson though? Look, you know, William Christopher Sweeney is in charge. He's the head coach. Generally, don't overdo a coordinator. They had a number of defensive players are already decommitting. You got to replace that. There's still the chance that Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinator, could go to Virginia or he could stay. Clemson's in a little, you know, I don't want to overblow it, but one bad season. But how big is losing him to Clemson, Pete?
I think it's pretty important. Like, we just kind of tracked. He was really the one of the key fundamental building blocks to getting them going. And their recruiting class is a little bit in flux right now. As of Thursday, they had a couple defensive decommits, and they're down a few guys. They're likely to promote internally on the defensive side. They have a QC here. They're going to move up to be a co-DC. And if Tony Elliott leaves, which is never a guarantee with Tony Elliott, as we've learned from the great Charlottesville vigil of Thursday, the plan would be to move Brandon Streeter over from quarterback coach to offensive coordinator at Clemson. So this is a big double down Dabo on himself. Dabo got good when they went to the outside and brought in big name power coordinators to anchor the X's and O's. And this is an internal set of beliefs where they're going to say, okay, what we've built is good enough and what we've recruited is good enough. We're going to carry on in our own way. Now, look, that's not uncommon. Stanford's done it. This is the Patriot way in a lot of ways. Like, this is the model coaches would prefer. You don't want it to be Coach X's offense and Coach X leaves. You want it to be the Clemson offense. So it allows for continuity. Continuity is like the great strategic advantage in college football right now, because the whole thing is just like utter chaos every day, right? Everything in the portal, coaches leaving, everything. So if you have continuity, seemingly that's some type of an advantage. And with Brent Venables and Tony Elliott there for darn near a decade, that was an unbelievable strategic advantage for Dabo Swinney, just in terms of you knew what you had, you knew what you were doing. Venables, quite frankly, had that fairly elaborate sign borrowing operation, which was not illegal, but certainly—
Did you say sign borrowing?
Borrowing. Yeah, that's borrowing.
Oh, come on. It's stealing. You can call it stealing. It's okay.
I was just being sarcastic. I obviously know the drill and the score. It wasn't like Spygate with the Patriots, is my point, where like they were illicitly videotaping or anything like that. It's you're signaling. People are trying to figure out the signals, and they had a pretty elaborate operation to do it. So that was always, when you talk to people who played Clemson, that was always a huge advantage. And Pat's written about that. I've written about that in the past. So it's all going to be a little bit different. And you know, I think Dabo's excited to move up and reward those who've stayed around and stayed loyal. And he's created this great culture where guys want to stay. And quite frankly, they've compensated the heck out of these guys, right? I mean, Venables is making $2.5 million. That reset the coordinator. He reset the coordinator market a few times with him. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do and how they move forward, considering they're coming off a year where things were a little wobbly. And they're doubling down on themselves. Now, with this limited class, and quite frankly, some subpar play at certain positions, especially the offensive line, how aggressive they really get in the portal and try to use the portal, which they've sort of shunned. And Dabo has been Dabo's anti-change in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? Dabo's spent some time yelling at the cloud some. And look, he's done well with no change, so I can see why he wouldn't want any. And they're at an interesting inflection point where change is coming, and how are they going to evolve and adapt is going to determine the next iteration of Clemson.
Yeah, that they've been the most continuity solid staff, I think, in the whole sport, really, you know, during most of Dabo's tenure. You know, promoting within, certainly on offense, they did that with, you know, Chad Morris is out. Okay, well, Jeff Scott. We got you and Tony Elliott, then Jeff Scott leaves. Well, we still have Tony Elliott, and now Tony Elliott may leave. Well, we still got Brandon Streeter. Defensively, it always was like it was Venable's show. And so do you have the replacement there? Do you have the gravitas on the staff to be able to do it the way Venables did, from the sign borrowing to everything else, you know, game planning and deciding when to blitz and not blitz? You know, he dialed up some really good stuff in games. You'd watch him at key points. Make great calls. So can they replace that? On top of that, Dan Radakovich, the AD, is leaving. Now they're going to promote from within there, too, almost certainly with Graham Neff. So they are basically saying our infrastructure is good enough to keep us going. As long as we got Dabo, we got the guys around Dabo just to keep rolling that way. And we'll see if it turns out to be the case. But this is a definite transition point for sure for Clemson.
It definitely an interesting year. 12 recruits they currently have committed. That's it. They're losing some on defense. I'm sure they will be fine. They have number one quarterback in the country coming in, Cade Klubnik from Austin Westlake. Although I guess it depends where you want to put Quinn Ewers. Is he last year? Is he this year? But don't cry too much for Clemson. But definitely a little bit of a transition. We'll see what they decide to do. All right, a little breaking news here on Thursday afternoon as we tape this. Friend John Canzano, who is king of all Portland media, a columnist for the Oregonians, got a radio show up there, very connected, has reported that the University of Oregon has requested permission to speak to UCLA coach Chip Kelly.
How about that?
Former Oregon coach. Now, we don't know where this leads. Presumably, they would not request permission unless you knew. Kind of like, you know, calling up, like, what's that old thing where you call the dad to ask permission to ask his daughter to marry you? Like, you better know the answer before.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. But I don't know. Thoughts on this?
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Would Chip Kelly go back and try to recreate the magic he had there? He was very slow getting traction at UCLA. Did finally break through this year. Went 8-4. You know, still did not win the Pac-12 South. Didn't necessarily come that close to winning the Pac-12 South. And Lincoln Riley's coming in and mowing down people already in recruiting as far as grabbing people that he already had committed from the LA area at Oklahoma. So if you're Chip, you may be looking and saying, well, might be about that time. And the way these things tend to go, you know, the boosters have all the warm and fuzzy memories of the last time we were great. And that was when Chip Kelly was there. If they feel like he could reconjure that in an era where hurry up, no huddle tempo by itself doesn't win big anymore. You have to have more going for yourself than that because everybody does it. And so everybody knows how to defend it. And that was one of Chip's big strengths was just being faster than everyone before everyone was ready for that. You know, does Phil Knight probably have a little interest in this? He certainly does. Would he be excited to have Chip Kelly in the mix? Maybe so. We'll see where it goes. But that's a very interesting development on the Pac-12.
You know, we were just talking about the underwhelming pools for coaching candidates. And quite frankly, to me, it makes all the sense in the world that Oregon's going after Chip Kelly, because the other alternatives aren't in the same universe of Chip in terms of experience, success, relevance. Now, there's very good coaches, and there's good coaches that have been discussed. But if you're Oregon, which has lived on flash and neon and Heisman billboards in Times Square and all the, you know, all the fluorescent trappings that that program has been enabled to develop because of Nike and, quite frankly, a lot of winning, Chip is clearly the sexiest guy in that realm. And the dynamic here that's fascinating, I've never seen a dynamic like this, quite like this in a coaching search. There's always buyouts. There's always financial things. Chip's buyout is $9 million on January 15th and then zero on January 16th.
Whoa.
Usually it's like, okay, it's guaranteed this percent through year one and this percent year two, and it's a sliding scale and it kind of makes sense. And this was done, I think, because UCLA was so giddy to get him from Florida and then didn't want him to leave. So they just said, okay, if he's going to go, and UCLA, quite frankly, has been paying buyouts out the ears for years. I mean, Jim Mora's buyout, I still think they're paying Jim Mora right now. I don't know how the UConn, you know, stuff was, but that's kind of amazing because, quite frankly, but our listeners probably forgot Jim Mora was the UCLA coach. And they're paying him, I think, till January of this year, unless the good state of Connecticut, unless our friends from New England United have alleviated them from that or some of that obligation. Steve Alford, they owed a boatload of money to, if you remember. And they would have hired Jamie Dixon over Mick Cronin, but they didn't want to pay his buyout. The taxes got in the way of it. So
that worked out.
So it's a place that was scorned a little bit by these buyouts. And because of that, here they are sitting there, you know, wanting to protect this asset. But at the same time, you know, Chip Kelly hasn't got an extension yet either. So I think he has only 1 year left on his deal, which is anomalous in a lot of ways that he'd be going into the season like this. So it's a really interesting stare down right now. Does Chip want to go back to Eugene where he was? I believe he was 46-7 while he was there. Yeah. I mean, that's a wild. That's like 86% of your games. I mean, he was wildly successful. I almost don't feel like that era went by so fast we don't appreciate how many times he scored like 60 points in the first half. I mean, it was just preposterous.
Remember, they go for two every time. Like, it'd be 8-0 right off the bat, you know, like demoralizing.
Yes, yes. And, you know, Chip's joke now is that he uses all the time. Is we went fast and had shiny helmets. Now everybody goes fast and has shiny helmets. Yeah, well, and so he'd be going back to Oregon without the very distinct strategic advantage that he helped create. I mean, that was his, he was a step ahead of everybody, and it was fun to see and it was fun to watch. Now everybody's caught up in some ways. He's still an excellent football coach, but he built this UCLA team out of the portal, big mauling linemen, great tight ends, and then a couple really good transfer tailbacks. And DTR, you know, had a really nice season, and they went 8-4. But the problem is Chip created the monster. He doesn't have the strategic advantage to go do it. That said, I think they should hire Chip Kelly. Like, if you're at Oregon right now, I think he's your best option on the board. It would bring back some good vibes from that era. But complications are looming and will be sort of picked apart here in the next few days.
There's also Portland State Bruce Barnum, who earlier this year bought beer for everyone who went to the game.
That's right.
Portland State game. I think that's
the podcast favorite coach right there.
$14,000 bar tab, supposedly, he paid. Very, very interesting. I mean, can you go home again? Usually you can't. Expectations in Eugene for Chip Kelly would be, we're going to be back to number one in the country. Now, you know, off the charts.
Yeah.
The schematic advantage.
Always, like Bill Walsh tried it at Stanford. Second time around, not good.
Brady Hoke's still texting all caps down there.
Brady Hoke.
SDSU.
Brady Hoke is doing it.
He's doing very well.
He does really text in all caps, by the way. That just wasn't from the Tennessee Falls. Brady Hoke always texts in all caps for years. That's the truest thing ever.
I could see Brady Hoke's cap lock being on and just not knowing how to turn it off.
Exactly.
Been on for 5 years. man, it's, you know, look, it's great. You go up there, the facilities, everything's great, but it's still hard to recruit. You got to go all over the country to recruit. Does he want to do that? Does Chip Kelly want to recruit like that again? You know, he's in Texas.
Will Lyles, right?
Without my man, Will Lyles. You got to be everywhere. You know, I'm looking at his recruiting class right now. He's got 12 kids. This is at UCLA. And all of them, 10 of them are from Southern, basically. There's a Stockton in there. Oh, they're all from California. One from Utah and one from Washington. He's obviously going to do the portal again. Like, would Oregon fans be okay with this?
They're loaded right now, too. Like, let's not.
Oh, yeah. They had three straight, like, they're good classes under Cristobal.
Really good classes. Mario Cristobal used that term, stacked classes. Like, that's a term reserved for like Kirby Smart, Nick Saban. And Mario really liked, he used walking off the field at the horseshoe. He said that to me. We've stacked great classes here in a row. Like, Noah Sewell will be one of the faces of college football next year. Just to have one name of, Justin Flo was the best linebacker recruit in the country last year. He's up there now. Their secondary, they had injuries. They kept replacing them with dudes. They're really in good shape for a veteran coach who knows what he's doing to help put the hammer lock down, call great plays, and, you know, maybe keep that thing rolling in the top 10, top 15.
Pretty interesting. And what does UCLA do? Like, how much do you pay for Chip Kelly? Is he worth it? Does he bring in the fans? Does he sell tickets? It's juicy. This one's juicy. Be fun to see how it plays out. We will see. By the time you listen to this, there could be all sorts of denials, but what are you going to do? Let us get to the race for the case. Pete, you are the champion.
All hail.
Moving on.
Moving on. There you go.
That's about all I wanted.
We got it out of the way. There we go.
I mean, in defense of the lack of celebration, it's really pretty anticlimactic. So
absolutely kicked our ass. We all tried to catch up with you. Our mistake was we spent all our time fading Pete and trying to work. Once you get the lead, it's just, you have all the advantage. It's like in Monopoly, right? You get the lead and then everyone screwed up. Pete won big. Good man. He did not want a case of beer from anybody. He wanted donations to Play Ball Boston. goes charity. I can tell you this, if the unlikely event I ever win this thing, there'll be no charity.
charity to the Bush you. Brewing Company.
Yeah. Keeping some good guys in St. Louis in the bottling line on the job. Pete,
altruistic.
Tell us about Play Ball Boston. Others can. And Play Ball Boston. You're doing a Santa run this weekend, right?
Yes.
Speedos.
Doing a Santa run
stuff?
This weekend. Yes. So Play Ball Boston is a charity I'm on the board of. I've been on the board of for about 10 years. It funds junior high sports. It's a private funding of public school sports. It's some of the neediest public schools in Boston and around Massachusetts. Towns like Holyoke, Lawrence. We raise money and give it to these schools so they can fund programs so kids can have junior high sports programs. So that's Play Ball Boston. That's what we do. It's kind of a mom and pop charity started by my buddy Mike Carney, old Georgetown lacrosse guy. And I'm our de facto, and I will add, very poor PR guy. That's kind of my job on the board, is to go get publicity. And this weekend is the Santa Speedo Run, the 21st one. It's been going to, the proceeds have been going to Play Ball for about a decade. We've raised over $1 million from the run. And you basically run a mile outside in a Speedo or a Santa outfit of some kind. It's usually very cold. Dan, who very kindly made a donation to my page, wished it to be cold. It's actually going to be a high of 63 on Saturday, which is like the complete anomaly of all time. So that's less the people of suburban Boston will have to see, Chewbacca running around their neighborhood in a Speedo. So that's probably good for them, because I'll be able to run a little faster. There's been some years now where it's been cold. It was like 8 degrees one year, and it was like spitting ice. Yeah, that was, I did my best Kenyan marathon impression there running down Boylston Street. So anyway, thank you for letting me chat about the charity. And thank you for your kind donations, Dan and Sully.
I'm getting there.
You're too busy stalking Vince Tyree at Louisville restaurants today. I know.
Yeah, it's been a busy day.
What was that interaction like?
Oh, it was hilarious. I mean, I park my car, I get out, he's walking on the sidewalk there. And so
this is the Louisville athletic director.
The former Louisville athletic director runs into
the Louisville athletic director. He tweeted about it today. Sorry.
Yeah. So I said, hi, Vince. Well, imagine seeing you here. I'm just getting a little quick Christmas shopping done, and here you are. And he said, what are you buying me for Christmas? I said, well, I guess nothing in garnet and gold, because he had just basically pulled out of the Florida State athletic director search after having been extended the offer and everybody on earth thinking he was going. And he changed the subject immediately and said, well, I usually see you in like Stanford or Georgia gear. And I said, well, can I ask you what's going on? He's like, well, out of deference to Florida State, we'll let them announce where they're going, and I'll talk to you guys later. That was the extent of that interaction.
Nothing ever is as smooth at Louisville. Always interesting.
No, it was not. People went to bed Thursday night thinking that he was leaving for Florida State and the president was staying, and we wake up and the president's going to Penn State and he's not going to Florida State. So just another day at Louisville.
All right, so let's get to the one game. We'll pick it anyway. And then we're going to have the big bowl pick'em, where I usually do much better. I'm really good at assessing motivations of players. That's really the only thing I'm good at. I can beat Pete in the bowl pick'em. Army-Navy, one game this weekend, 3 p.m. Eastern on CBS. Game's up in MetLife Stadium, one of the uglier NFL stadiums, unfortunately. But they've been playing this game since 1890. Army giving 7.5. Over-under is just 34.5. Yeah, defensive struggle. Drop from 37 to 34.5. Love people betting this much on Army-Navy.
People still need to bet.
Nobody's got any other games. The bets, 80% of the money is on Army. Half the bets and 60% of the money is on the over at BetMGM. Pat, who's going to win, Army-Navy?
Army. Army's going to win. Better team, better season. Hadn't been a great season for the Naval Academy. And I think that Army has found ways to get this rivalry used to just be so lopsided in favor of Navy. It has changed in recent years. Jeff Munkin, phenomenal job. For some reason, people still don't want to hire Jeff Munkin. I would hire him. I think Army has the better defense. I don't know about the over-under there, but I will take the cadets and lay the points. Also, because my dad was in the infantry in World War II, invasion of Italy. He was a regular enlisted boy. He was not West Point, but still, I know he always rooted for Army against Navy, so I'm with him there.
All right. Thank you. Thank him for his service.
Boy, Navy's really in a tailspin. And you hate to see it because Kenny Niumatalolo has had such a good run there, and they've had some great teams, and they did beat UCF this year. They've had some moments. They won at Tulsa, but for the most part, it's been a bit of a slog. They are coming off a win at Temple, but pretty much everybody beat Temple this year. There's one thing I learned about Army Navy, which I thought was interesting. So this is probably going to be more interesting than any analysis I have of the game, is that the military academy schools play each other and focus on each other so much and spend so much time preparing for what they do. They actually like run secondary offenses to play in those games. So they don't actually, I was told this when someone was talking about Navy playing Cincinnati. Somebody at Cincinnati said basically like, we now know Navy so well that staff's there in their fifth year and they've really done a good job of shutting them down, especially the prior 3 years, that they essentially bring out a new junk offense as like an answer to those who knew it well. And I thought, and again, my job is for like just total, you know, mindless minutia. Dan's already yawning on the screen here, but I thought that was just kind of interesting football nuance. I thought that was kind of interesting football nuance. That said, boy, Navy sputtered and struggled here. And, it's really been a pretty good Army run by Monk. And I agree with Pat. I really think that someone is going to be well-served hiring him, especially because do you remember the pool of hireable coaches, Pat, being as thin as it is right now?
I mean, no. I mean, if you look at, according to, you know, popular wisdom in among the athletic departments or athletic directors, it was like, oh, we can't find any coaches. And Jeff Munkin's sitting there winning year after year after year after year. I would be certainly tempted to give him a shot if you're a struggling Power Five athletic department.
Yeah, and he'd evolve from the option, but just all these ADs live in fear of making mistakes. And they don't see like how hard it is to go 17-6 in the last 2 years at Army, or to go 11-2, which they obviously did in 2018, 10-3. I mean, that is almost impossible to do. And just they see the stigmatization of the offense, which would evolve if he went to a more conventional program. So, yeah, I would think, and he was a little bit in the mix at Duke this year. I would think that he ends up being a prime focus come next year.
I will go with Navy. I got to fade Pat. We got to break the tie. We're both tied for second here. But
there we go.
But Army, 93rd toughest schedule in the country. Navy, on the flip side, third toughest schedule in the country. You know, and I like that hook. 7.5. I think it's going to be a close, sloggy game, low-scoring game. Keep it within 7. Let's go Midshipmen.
That's a good schedule stat. I'll give you credit. Now, so let's figure this out. If Pete won and you and I are tied for second, who was last? Oh, I think we know who was last. Let's see. That would be Dan.
Oopsie. Yeah.
Podcast needs to end. all right. Look, Army is on a four-game win streak. Even their losses, like they were in a shootout with Wake, and they only lost 2014 to Wisconsin. Just beat Liberty, playing very, very good football. I am going to channel, supposedly, this quote. General George C. Marshall during World War II said, "I want an officer for a secret and dangerous mission. I want a West Point football player."
There you go.
The Marshall good plaque enough. Hangs up at the stadium. I think they all touch it on the way out. So I'm taking Army. I will take Army. All right. We are going to do a whole bowl thing next week, early next week. We got signing day coming up. We'll get more football involved in all of this. So please continue to subscribe and stick with us. The bowl preview one is always a good time pod. We will talk to you all later.